First, I write a sentence. I get a tickle of an idea for how the words might come together, like an angler feeling a tug on the rod's line. Then I sound out the sentence in my head. Then I tap it on my keyboard, trying to recall its shape. Then I look at it and say it aloud to see if it sings. Then I tweak, rejig, shave off a syllable, swap a word for a phrase or a phrase for a word. Then I sit it next to other sentences to see how it behaves in company. And then I delete it all and start again. If there were a pie chart that divided up my time on Earth, the coloured slice that covers writing sentences would be the biggest, apart from the one that covers the thing everyone does, sleeping. I don't count how much writing I have done each day, but if I did, I wouldn't count words. I'd count sentences. Sentences are my core output, the little widgets I make in my workshop of words. It helps to think of it, like this, as just cranking out a daily quota of sentences, instead of being a writer, which feels like a claim that will need to be stamped and approved. I write maybe 3,500 sentences a year. Is this too many, or not enough, or about right? I have no idea. I write one sentence, then another, and repeat until done. I don't know when done is. Some writers claim to have sentences in their heads hollering to get out. Flaubert wrote that he was itching with them. These writers just seem to have a knack for putting words into right-seeming order, as if it were a skill as randomly allotted as being able to wiggle one's ears. Not me. But I can spot a good tune when I hear it. I know what a good sentence looks and sounds like, so that when I come across one in my own writing, I have the good sense not to delete it, but to try and replicate it. Having only minor gifts has its compensations. It has forced me to think hard about how words join up and why some sentences work better than others. A nightingale has no idea why such a bewitching noise emerges from its throat. A human nightingale impersonator must pass every note. I may give more time to them than most people do, but we are, all of us, of school age and older, in the sentences game. Sentences are our writing commons, the shared ground where every writer walks. A poet works with them, but so does the unsung author who came up with "items trapped indoors cause delays" or "store in a cool, dry place." Every kind of writer writes in sentences. Even the most clueless or careless strew their writing with capital letters and full stops, in the hope that they will turn what lies between them into this universal currency. By learning to make sentences, we learn not just about writing, but about everything. The sentence is where we make the briefest of senses out of this mad, beautiful, befuddling mess. Life. In 1940, a soon-to-retire Cambridge math don called G. H. Hardy published a defense of his life's work. His field was the purest form of mathematics, number theory, and his book was meant to be a mea culpa for spending his life on something of no practical use that few people would ever understand. In fact, although he called it a mathematician's apology, it was not very apologetic. Hardy declared that math had given him his life's one great permanent happiness, and that when the world was immolating itself in war, it offered a consolingly parallel universe of spare, numbered beauty. Applied math, the kind that could compute the dimensions of the fourth bridge, or the reach of a radio transmitter, he decried as trivial. Real math, he thought, bypassed the world in pursuit of pure abstraction. It was useful only rarely and never on purpose. Like Einstein, Hardy felt, above all, that equations should be beautiful. A mathematician, like a painter or a poet, he wrote, is a maker of patterns. A mathematical equation and a written sentence have much in common. Both rely on symmetry and balance, often asserting a connection between the seemingly different. Both explain reality in as elegantly concise a form as they can. Both reduce randomness to inevitability, their equal signs or clauses falling into place with a rightness that renders the inchoate and incoherent suddenly clear. Both tell us something about the world outside themselves, but both also swim in their own kind of beauty.